U.S. v. Taylor, 10-2947.
Good morning. Jay Stevens on behalf of Mr. Taylor. The issue in this case is whether Indiana Statute 3542.21(3) defines a crime of violence for the purpose of the federal sentencing guidelines, and our contention is that it does not. That statute defines a battery as a rude, insolent, touching in a rude, insolent, or angry manner, and makes it a Class C felony if it results in serious bodily injury to any other person or if it's committed by means of a deadly weapon.
Well, why shouldn't we follow the cases from other circuits looking at battery statutes a lot like this one, finding that they involve at least the threatened use of physical force?
Well, I think this court has been on the forefront in this area of crimes of violence. This has been a very active area for this court in defining what exactly constitutes a crime of violence. We started out after the Supreme Court in Shepard told us that we looked to certain documents in the case and not to the conduct, with Woods that gave us the categorical approach. And under that categorical approach, what we're looking at is whether the elements of the statute, not the conduct, define a crime of violence.
Where'd Judge Miller go wrong? He very methodically went through step by step, looking as if he's followed the Supreme Court and followed Fife. What did he do wrong?
Well, Fife, of course, gave us the concept of the divisibility of a statute, and this particular statute is divisible into two sections, and clearly the statute charges the second section that the offense was committed by means of a deadly weapon. And I think Judge Miller followed the dictates of this court in the Supreme Court's case in Shepard, this court's case in Woods and Fife, right down to the point of determining the precise statute which had been violated. And I think in analyzing the statute itself is where he went wrong.
But isn't Judge Williams right that similar statutes in other states, other circuits, if Judge Miller was there, he'd be affirmed in some other circuits, wouldn't he?
I think that's absolutely true, and I think this circuit has taken a little different approach to crimes of violence, and it's a much more detailed and methodical view that gives us a pretty definite framework as to how to analyze crimes of violence. And I think looking at the analysis under the framework that this court has given us, this is not a crime of violence. And the reason it isn't a crime of violence is because touching someone in a rude, insolent, or angry manner with a deadly weapon doesn't necessarily involve an element of the use, attempted use, or threatened use of force, which is the first part of our definition of crime of violence under the 4B1.2. Then we look at the residual clause. Does it otherwise present a serious potential risk of injury? Had this been a case where the information alleged shooting someone with a gun, it might be a more difficult case. The government's raised, of course, the application note, which tells us that if the conduct of the count of which the defendant convicted by its nature presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another, that also is a basis for finding a crime of violence. Touching with a knife or touching with any deadly weapon, though, does not necessarily make the statute one that defines a crime of violence. There are a number of ways that one can touch someone in a rude or insolent manner with all manners of deadly weapons without...
Use a knife and tell me how you can do it.
I'm sorry, sir?
Use the knife as an example and tell me how you can prod somebody without being threatened deadly force.
I was at Thanksgiving dinner with a big family gathering, and as big family gatherings go, we're all seated around the table. Had my nephew reached for a dinner roll across the table, and my brother
stabbed
picked him. Up a butter knife and wrapped him on the knuckles, he would have touched him in a rude, angry...
Is this a butter knife we're talking about?
We don't know. All we know is that this involves a knife. There are a number of different knives. There are bowie knives.
Let's discuss the possibility of it being a butter knife in the context of the case itself.
Is that a deadly weapon?
Can a butter knife become a deadly weapon?
A butter knife could become a deadly weapon if applied with enough force.
I'm having a hard time fathoming how you could take it prodding with a knife without a threat.
Yeah, especially the way it was here, where it was not wrapping him on the hands. This was, as I understand it, striking him in the stomach. And I'm with Judge Bauer. Give me a hypothetical. You help us. Give us a hypothetical where you touch someone in a rude, insolent, or angry manner with a deadly weapon, and it is not at least threatening.
I think the image
that... butter knife doesn't cut it. That butter knife Thanksgiving example, that's not going anywhere.
Well, again, we don't know what kind of knife this is, and we're left to speculate. But this information...
Suppose it's a possibility about being a butter knife.
Well, this information conjures...
that completely out of hand.
This information conjures up images of the climactic scene of West Side Story when Tony and Maria's brother are involved in a struggle and a knife comes out, and the next thing you know, her brother is lying dead from the knife wound.
So that qualifies.
Well, that
clearly qualifies.
Obviously that qualifies. Yeah. That's the image we get when we read this.
It wasn't any good either, but go ahead.
But the plain fact is we don't know the circumstances of this offense from the documents that we're allowed to look at under Shepard. And for that reason, this should not be determined to be a crime of violence.
All right. All right. Then you'll save the rest of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Then we'll hear now from Mr. Schmidt.
This is a sharp butter knife, by the way.
A shiv butter knife.
Depends how you cut your butter.
May it please the court, Donald Schmid for the United States of America. I thought I was the one who was supposed to bring up the West Side Story example. Here, Your Honors, there are really three... I think there are really three separate reasons why Mr. Taylor's prior conviction for battery with a deadly weapon was properly and should be considered a crime of violence. First and foremost, using the modified categorical approach, touching someone in a rude, insolent, or angry manner with a deadly weapon, the combination of the insolent, angry, rude touching plus a deadly weapon, the courts have universally found, every circuit to consider this fact scenario with other similar statutes, have held that constitutes at the very least a threatened use of force. Those circuits include the Tenth Circuit interpreting a Kansas aggravated battery statute that is exactly similar to the Indiana statute in wording, the Tenth Circuit deciding the New Mexico assault with a deadly weapon statute, the Fifth Circuit in a couple of cases that we cited in our brief, and even the Ninth Circuit in a couple of cases, including the Washington State assault with a deadly weapon. Each case has held that touching someone with a deadly weapon, and here in Indiana it has to be by statute, touching in a rude, insolent, or angry manner constitutes at least a threatened use of force. There's a second reason why this particular prior conviction should be considered a crime of violence. Under the residual clause, because it presents a serious risk of physical injury similar in degree to the enumerated crimes, and because it involves purposeful, aggressive, and violent conduct similar in kind to the enumerated crimes, it should also be considered a crime of violence under the residual clause. The courts have emphasized, including this court, have emphasized that not every conceivable fact scenario has to meet this requirement. Simply in the typical case, does it present a risk of physical injury, serious risk of potential physical injury? And here there can be no doubt that it does. Touching someone in a rude, insolent, and angry manner with a deadly weapon, and that, Your Honor, is defined as a weapon capable, readily capable of causing serious bodily injury or death, Here you have to concede that that, in the usual and typical case, presents a serious risk of potential physical injury. There's even a third reason why, because this is a guidelines case decided under Section 4B1.2. Section 2K2.1 refers over to 4B1.2. And Application Note 1 says that it's also considered a crime of violence if the prior offenses, if the conduct set forth, that is expressly charged by its nature, presented a serious potential risk of physical injury. And here's where we can refer to the actual information with which Mr. Taylor was charged in Indiana. And that information charged him with striking another person with a knife in the stomach. And that obviously presents a serious risk of physical injury. The striking with a knife is the obvious use of physical force. Striking a person in the stomach with a knife, so it wasn't just probing or rapping on the knuckles, it was striking a person in the stomach, and that obviously presents a serious risk of physical injury. For these three reasons, any one of which would be sufficient by themselves, but here there are three separate reasons why Mr. Taylor's prior conviction under the battery with a deadly weapon statute should be, and I think by Judge Miller, was properly considered a crime of violence. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. How much time does Mr. Stevens have? You may proceed.
I think we need to keep the two arguments separate, because Mr. Schmidt is arguing on one hand a statutory definition and whether the statute meets a crime of violence, and on the other hand whether the conduct as alleged in the information meets the application note. And those are slightly different arguments. The statutory argument, guideline definition has two parts. One, the use of or threatened use of physical force, or the residual clause where it presents a serious risk of bodily injury. The application note only involves the serious risk of bodily injury. Now, in addressing the application note, Mr. Smith, in his brief, described this as a use of force. It doesn't necessarily appear from the face of the information that this involved a use of force, and even if it did, this is not an element of the guideline definition, because the guideline definition, as I understand it, involves presenting a serious risk of physical injury, if the conduct by its very nature presents a serious risk of physical injury. So I think the arguments have to be looked at a little bit separately. Now, Mr. Smith says that the use of a knife striking someone in the stomach is a use or threatened use of force if it's done in a rude, angry, or insolent manner. In fact, one could simply take the butt of a knife and poke someone with it. It wouldn't matter whether it was a butter knife or a Bowie knife. It wouldn't present any risk of danger, and I don't think that's an act that necessarily involves an element of force. Yet, it is a touching in a rude, angry, or insolent manner with a deadly weapon. I agree that it's not necessary to exclude all possible scenarios. However, we don't know, because we have no statistical information, how many cases under this statute involve the actual use of force and how many don't. We just have no way of knowing. So taking a look at the statute itself, my position is simply that touching someone with a knife in the stomach in a rude and angry or insolent manner does not necessarily involve the use of force, the threat of force, or the potential serious risk of bodily injury.
Thank you. And you were appointed?
Federal Community Defender Office.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you for your representation of your client. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. It's good to see you again. Case will be taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.